Patrick Mahomes conversations for breakfast. 610 Sports Radio. KZSB Kansas City. KRBZ HD2 Kansas City. A radio.com station.
Hopefully you're having a pleasant Christmas afternoon with Chris Unocero, Sports Machine Sean Levine, taking you up until 6 o'clock right here on 610 Sports Radio and all of the world on the radio.com app. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we will step back inside the mind of the machine. Chris and I will debate the best airline, the worst airline, our favorite airline, because indeed this is the busiest travel weekend of the year. But let's get back into the Kansas City Chiefs, where hopefully we're not talking about them traveling at all. The only way we could talk about them traveling in the postseason is if the S absolutely hits the fan, and that's what it would be. It would legitimately be not just the biggest local collapse for any team at any time that I can ever remember, but quite frankly, if the Chiefs don't end up the number one seed at this point, if the Chiefs don't have home field advantage in the playoffs at this point, if Arrowhead doesn't host at least one, if not multiple playoff games, then the S absolutely hit the fan, because quite frankly, this team has had the opportunity in their own hands now for the better part of, well, really this entire season. Right out the gates, they went on the road to play what was supposed to be the team that was going to win the AFC West, and they beat them. So they already had a game up in the standings and the tiebreaker right out the gates. And frankly, the entire month of October, the team couldn't have been any better and the season couldn't have gone any smoother. They didn't lose a game. And then November rolled around, and same thing. The team was great. The only loss that they had the entire month was on the road against the incumbents, against the greatest coach and quarterback combination of all time. Never a bad loss, especially when you put up 40 points. That's when they lost to Tom Brady. So we went through October, went through November. The team only had one loss. And then something happened. December rolled around, and the team has looked completely different. Now, the easiest thing to point to is to say, yeah, that's around the same time that the Kareem Hunt video came out and the Chiefs showed him the door and they had to have a makeshift running game, and then Spencer Ware got hurt, so they had to throw a bunch of Williams in there. And quite frankly, those guys have done a really nice job, and I don't think that the offense has taken too much of a step back. Really, if you look at the total numbers and even the running game numbers since Kareem Hunt has been gone, they haven't tapered off that much. But something has changed with this football team in December. That's when they played the Oakland Raiders last time, and they beat them by a touchdown. Fine, all's well that ends well. Then the next week, they played Baltimore, and I always watch on ESPN.com because I like to keep the stats up for the Chiefs game as I'm watching it. And in the corner on ESPN.com, it live updates the percentage of that team to win the game. And in the fourth quarter, with less than 2 minutes left, and Baltimore had the football in a tie game, Baltimore was a 99.9% chance to win that football game, and they somehow blew it. I'm sorry, 95.9, but either way, you get it. There was a high likelihood the Chiefs were going to lose that football game, and they managed to take it into overtime, and then they managed to win that game. My point is this, and then, of course, back-to-back losses. My point is this. For what looked like an unbeatable, for what looked like an immortal football team through the first 2 months of the season, clearly something has changed. Feel free to hit me up on the text line at 69306. But here's the good news, okay? That game versus Seattle, and don't get it twisted, Seattle's a really good football team. For some reason, we always like to judge these football teams on kind of our preconceived notions. And this year, Seattle wasn't supposed to be good because they no longer had Richard Sherman, because they no longer had Michael Bennett, because they were supposed to take this huge step back. The Legion of Boom, they were getting a little bit old. Pete Carroll's going to be retired in a couple of years. Russell Wilson is really just an average quarterback that's been propped up by this great defense and Marshawn Lynch. And no. Russell Wilson, after beating the Chiefs, now has, wait for it, 34 touchdown passes and 6 interceptions. If it wasn't for two guys that we talk about a lot on this show, Patrick Mahomes and Drew Brees. Drew Brees! then Russell Wilson might be the favorite to win the league MVP. And if it wasn't for a couple of other coaches out there, Andy Reid included, I think you need to include Pete Carroll on the short list for NFL Coach of the Year. I only bring this up because of all the good wins that the Chiefs have had this year and of all the good teams that they've played, Seattle has to be included in that conversation. More so than, say, Pittsburgh. Did that feel like a really good, really big-time, really solid win going on the road, beating Ben Roethlisberger and Mike Tomlin week two? Absolutely. And I don't mean to poo-poo it. But now we're here at the end of the season. We kind of look back and we're like, yeah, Pittsburgh's not that good. Yeah, they're really dangerous. Yeah, they're really talented. But bottom line, what's their record tell us? It tells us they're a pretty average football team. At the time the Chiefs played Jacksonville, that was a, whoa, this is one of the best defenses in the last 10 years. They gave New England everything they wanted all the way in last year's AFC Championship game. This might be the first loss of the season, even though it's at Arrowhead. This is a different animal than Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs' offense have faced. And the Chiefs sent Jacksonville into a tailspin. After that game, Jacksonville was terrible. They've won one football game since. Maybe two, but you get my drift. Those seem like really good wins. Pittsburgh, Jacksonville. Truth is, that game versus Seattle is much more like the games the Chiefs are going to face from this point going forward. Now, hopefully they're not going to face a game like that coming up on Sunday versus Oakland. Oakland's a 13.5-point underdog. Yeah, the Raiders looked good last night on Monday Night Football versus the Broncos, but I think that was more of a scenario, the Broncos mailing it in and the Broncos looking really bad and their coach being terrible, than it was all of a sudden the Raiders being good. But the facts are the facts. The Raiders are 3-3 in their last six games, and they had a chance to beat the Chiefs, which would have made them 4-2. So Oakland might not be quite as bad as we made them out to be, and quite frankly, I don't think the Chiefs are quite as good. I don't say this to give you fear that the Chiefs are going to lose on Sunday, because the truth is this. And a moment of optimism for me here. The truth is this. If the Chiefs beat Oakland, and they should, 13.5-point favorites, one of the two teams has the future league MVP, and it's not Oakland. One of the teams has one of the best coaches going right now, and it's not Oakland. One of these teams has a top five wide receiver and a top five tight end, and it's not Oakland. One of these teams has home field advantage, it's not the Raiders. One of these teams has everything in the world to play for, and again, pardon my redundancy, again, it's not Oakland. So the Chiefs have every reason to go out there and win this game, and I think they will. And if they do, then all of their goals that they set out at the beginning of this month, hell, at the beginning of this season, will come true. And quite frankly, they probably didn't even set these goals. Something tells me that if the Chiefs over there at One Arrowhead Drive and at their practice facility in their locker room had any sort of similarity to the conversations that we've had here behind the mic at 610 Sports Radio, this was supposed to be a year of development. This was supposed to be a year where you made Patrick Mahomes comfortable. This was supposed to be a year where Patrick Mahomes got on the same page with Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt and all the other weapons that this team had heading into the season. And it took us about 5 minutes to go, oh, damn. I think this team's much better than I was giving them credit for versus the Chargers. And maybe there were some of you that thought that was an aberration. That was the exception to the rule. The Chiefs just played a good game out the gates. And frankly, we see that all the time. Case in point, I thought Buffalo was going to go 0-16 the way that they got their butts whipped the first game of the season. It turns out they're not that bad. I'm not sure that the Chiefs were ever quite as good as we made them out to be. Your thoughts, hit me up on the text line at 693-0-6. But if the Chiefs win, then all of a sudden, they've got everything they could have possibly hoped for. And let's not pretend like the bye is any small thing. Because not only do you not have to play, and yeah, the Chiefs are more talented, I would say, than 80% and better than 80% of the rest of the teams that are going to be in the postseason. But Chiefs fans, you know damn well that it doesn't matter that you're better than another team or that you have home field advantage. The old any given Sunday, or I guess when the playoffs come around, any given Saturday adage, rings true. So it's nice not to have to play at all. If you beat Oakland, you don't play at all. And you get another week of rest for Eric Berry and Spencer Ware and LDT and Irving and all these different guys that have been nicked up at different points this season. Not to mention just a mental break. You don't think that it would be really nice for Patrick Mahomes to have a week off to watch the playoffs, to sit back, to have everybody waxing poetic and talking about how great he is, and to sit on his own couch and watch that and relax? Absolutely. Something tells me, as positive and fun this year has been, it's been an absolute whirlwind. Think about you at your job, whatever your job is. Whether you're a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, a garbage man, a custodian, doesn't matter. Whatever your job is, a waiter, think about how good you were at your job when you first started it compared to after a little while, once you got comfortable and once you started having success. In the case of Patrick Mahomes, this guy had so much pressure from the entire city, from me, from you, from his own team, from his own front office to win right away. And I'll be damned if he hasn't exceeded all of our expectations. But again, as long as the Chiefs can beat Oakland at home, where they're going to be a 2-touchdown favorite, then they get a bye, they get to rest their players, and then they get back-to-back home games. And the reason that I think that that's so important is because there's very little separation right now between all these playoff teams. Even if we would agree that New Orleans is the favorite to come out of the NFC, and we would agree that the Chiefs, maybe you'd say the Chargers, are the favorites to come out of the AFC. If it ends up being Houston or Indy or Pittsburgh gets in and gets hot, or the Patriots, or over in the NFC, if it's the Rams or the Bears, nobody's going to be shocked, right? There's not that much separation between said teams, which is why home field advantage is absolutely imperative. Again, whatever path the Chiefs take, do I think that they're talented enough and has a proof in the pudding this season that they can go on the road and beat all these teams? Sure. We also know that they could lose to really good teams. As a matter of fact, I would argue this. Of the Chiefs' 4 losses this year, Seattle, the Chargers, the Rams, and the Patriots, what do all 4 of those teams have in common? They've all 4 already locked up playoff spots. So again, it's going to be teams like that, or maybe even those actual teams in the case of the Chargers and the Patriots, that the Chiefs are going to have to face going forward. The problem is, besides that one win, first game of the season, they haven't really proven that they can convincingly beat good teams, playoff teams, teams that they're going to have to face from this point going forward. That was a long time ago. First game of the season on the road against the Chargers. We had no idea what this team was going to be. We had no idea this defense would be quite as bad. We had no idea that Patrick Mahomes would be this good. But the truth is, guys, when you talk about convincing wins versus playoff teams, it's been months. This team's gotten fat off of Arizona and Cincinnati and Oakland and Denver a couple of times and San Francisco. That's where they've racked up their wins. I'm not suggesting that they can't go on the road or certainly at home beat good football teams, because they have. Hell, their schedule out the gates was as difficult as I've ever seen, and they started to prove to me and everybody else that they were a really good football team. But over the last month, month and a half, when they've played good football teams, Seattle, the Chargers, the Rams, New England, those good football teams have beat them. Your thoughts, 913-576-7610, or hit me up on the text line at 69306. Coming up next, let's take a trip back inside the mind of the machine right here on The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Sarah on the Sports Machine, Sean Levine, about an hour and 40 minutes away from heading over to my mom's place, seeing what she got me for Christmas this year. Probably a sweater, but more importantly, taking a bite of that.
The new pair of flip-flops.
Dude, I'm hoping I could use one. It's been a couple of years I've been rocking these bad boys. I'm really looking forward to the prime rib. I'm not as smart as you, Uno, Sarah. I didn't stop by Quick Trip this morning. I spent $13 on a little machine here and got a bag of chips and some licorice and beef jerky. I'm starving. Text line is blowing up from the 913. Andy Reid's play calling has changed. Why have we dialed it back? Do we not want to reveal all of our tricks? Well, I mean, at this point, you might as well open up the playbook. There's one regular season game left from the 6-2-0. Personally, I don't see any deserving coach of the year when your defense is that bad. Well, I don't think he's going to win coach of the year. I think it's probably going to end up in the hands of former Chief offensive coordinator, current Chicago Bears head coach, Matt Nagy from the 816. I think a lot of people are forgetting how different this team is from the start of the season. No Hunt, no Watkins, half the offensive line, banged up Hill, the Fuller injury. Our defense has always been bad, but we are certainly not as strong from a personnel standpoint as we were day one. Ironically enough, that's factually true, but it's kind of the opposite, where instead of going out there and trying to make moves in free agency, the Chiefs decided to let their own players get healthy. Because don't forget, halfway through the season, or maybe it was like a month into the season, they knew their defense sucked. They knew their secondary sucked. They knew they were going to have to make a move. At the time, it looked like Seattle wasn't going to be a playoff team, and they actually put Earl Thomas on the trade block, and the Chiefs were actually going to go out there and get him, all indicators told us. Well, instead, they decided when he broke his leg, they didn't need to make a move because they were going to get back members of their own secondary, i.e. Sorensen. They're going to get back Eric Berry. They're going to get back Cam Irving. They're going to get back LDT. So in theory, instead of making moves, they just figured they'd get their own guys back from the triage unit, and that would make them better. We'll see how it plays out. From the 6-3-0, other than one game, what's the Chiefs' best win? We haven't won a big game all season. That's what I was trying to say. I mean, I disagree that we haven't won a big game all season. We've won several big games. And not to mention, you shouldn't necessarily judge a team's schedule or the teams that they've played at the end of the season. To me, the better way to judge them is how good was that team when they played. So San Francisco, when the Chiefs played them, we didn't know they were going to be a 5-win football team. When the Chiefs beat Jacksonville, Jacksonville was just coming off of an AFC championship game. Even Pittsburgh. When the Chiefs played Pittsburgh, who was to know that they were going to end up an average football team? The Chiefs at least thought they were playing one of the best teams in the league. So to me, they've got a lot of good wins on the schedule. As far as convincing wins versus playoff teams, you got to go all the way back to week one. Right now, let's go all the way back inside the mind of the machine.
All right, kicking things off. This being the busiest travel time of the year, not really a weekend, Tuesday.
Touché.
But this being the busiest travel time of the year, do you have a favorite least favorite airline?
I do. Spirit is my favorite. If for nothing else, they're super cheap. I once flew to and from Las Vegas for $28. Now, granted, I had to bring all of my clothes and a laptop bag, but it worked out just fine. Most people have this horrible flying experience, at least at some point in their life, where they were stuck in an airport for 6 or 7 hours. I've only got one of those. I was stuck in the airport one time on a JetBlue layover flight on the actual tarmac. We got in the plane, and then the plane didn't take off for 4 hours. But that's it. Besides that, I guess when it comes to delays and getting stuck overnight at the airport type thing, I've gotten pretty lucky. I found an actual survey, of 50,000 flyers, and this is their top 7 favorite airlines. Number 7, my favorite airline, Spirit, followed by number 6, American, number 5, Frontier, number 4, United, number 3, Delta, number 2, most people's favorite, Southwest Airlines. I've never had a bad experience on Southwest Airlines, and number 1, Alaskan Airlines. I'd assume you have to fly to Alaska to experience that particular airline. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. What's next?
Yeah, just like you have to fly to the Southwest to get on Southwest, right?
Yeah. Thanks for pointing that out. What's next?
Yesterday, you were pretty noncommittal on the question of whether or not this year's KU team is better or worse than last year's KU team. Have you finally made a choice there?
No, I still haven't, only because the way that they get to their victories is just so different than it was a year ago. Where last year, it was so guard-oriented with Svi and with Devontae Graham, and you never knew which one of those guys was going to lead the team in scoring. Then as the year went along, Udoka Azubuike obviously became a big part of that team, and then you got all the injuries that that team dealt with. This year, I'm actually surprised with LeGerald Vick. I thought that LeGerald Vick would take on – now, statistically, he's been pretty damn good. As a matter of fact, he's averaging 17 points per game, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and he's shooting 50% from the field. He's knocking down 80% of his free throws, and he's hitting 50% of his three-pointers. So if you look down the line, his numbers are very similar to the last two guards that he followed in Frank Mason, National Player of the Year, and Devontae Graham, Big 12 Player of the Year. Ironically enough, I think that it's one of LeGerald Vick's teammates, Dedrick Lawson, that's going to end up being the Big 12 Player of the Year this season. Did you know his numbers were this good, guys? 20.6 points per game to go along with 11.5 rebounds. It's the way he does it. We just talked about Devontae Graham and Frank Mason. Those guys were so flashy, and they could get to the bucket and knock down threes. And then you've got Dedrick Lawson, who just kind of plays an old man down at the rec type game, and all he does is drops 21 points a game to go along with 11.5 rebounds. LeGerald Vick's averaging 17 a game. Udoka Azubuike, albeit injured, is averaging 13-6. And freshman Devon Dotson, the only other player in double figure scoring at just under 11 points per game. There's more balance on this team, but obviously last year's team was really good. They made it all the way to the Final Four. If they played head-to-head, though, I guess I'm taking this year's team. What's next?
Yeah, I think I just can't wait until KU fans actually say, oh, this team isn't any good, and there's the worst KU team that Bill Self's ever coached.
I'm already there.
Speaking of KU, which streak is more impressive? Them winning 14 consecutive Big 12 titles or the Patriots winning 10 straight AFC East titles?
If it was any other NFL team at any time, I would say it has to be the NFL team, because last year when the Chiefs won the AFC West for the second straight time, it was the first time in the history of the franchise that they had won back-to-back division titles, which is almost hard to sink your teeth into as successful as the Chiefs have been. But the truth is, winning the division in the NFL is extremely difficult. And then doing it two times in a row, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, I mean, come on, 10 times. And then you look at the other teams in the division. Miami's been terrible the last decade. The Jets have been worse, and Buffalo's been worse than either one of those other teams. So who have you really beat? And people say the same thing about the Big 12. They say, well, what if KU was in the ACC? What if KU was in the Big East? My answer is this. How many times has KU had to go up against the National Player of the Year? Not just the Conference Player of the Year that wasn't a member of the Jayhawks, but the National Player of the Year, Buddy Hield, Blake Griffin, Michael Beasley, Kevin Durant. And the common denominator is all the same. None of those guys won a Big 12 championship. So I'm going to say that the streak that KU putting together 14 straight, not to mention, if you want to compare KU's streak to, say, Bill Walton and Lou Alcindor back in the day under John Wooden, I think KU's streak is even more impressive than that, because Bill Walton and John Wooden, those dudes would stick around for 4 years, or they'd play for 3 years because freshmen couldn't play. But you get my drift. KU, Bill Self has been a chameleon. He's had one and dones. He'd had guys like Sherron Collins. He's had guys like Travis Relaford that stick around for 4 years. He's had Joel Embiid that gets injured. So he's been able to do it with a multitude of different types of teams. What's next?
So over the next week, you're going to have tons of bowl games going on. This includes college football playoff, the semifinals matchups, and my Florida Gators putting a beat down on the Michigan Wolverines.
But do they
in the
cover,
Peach Bowl.
Do they cover plus 6.5 is the question.
Yeah. So what would your three locks be for this coming flurry of college football bowl games we're going to have?
Well, let's add yours. I like it. I was actually going to take Florida plus the 6 and change over Michigan. Cal giving up a point to TCU. I'm done with TCU. I thought they were going to be one of the better teams in the Big 12 this season. They were one of the more average teams. They played Cal in the Quick Lane Bowl. Can't wait for that one. Give up the point with Cal. Purdue's a weird team, because Purdue beat Ohio State. Purdue somehow beat Ohio State, yet lost to four teams that finished under 500. So they're Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And Auburn, any team that starts the season in the top 10 is obviously loaded with talent, but clearly underperformed as they're not even ranked right now. But I'm still going to give up 3.5 Auburn against Purdue. That's in the Texas Bowl. And then we talked about this earlier in the college football playoff. Clemson versus Notre Dame. This is the number 2 versus number 3 team in the country. Any teams that are that close in the rankings shouldn't have more than a touchdown line in the game. It's almost a 2-touchdown line. As at last check, Clemson is a 13-point favorite over Notre Dame. Clemson wins, but the Irish keep it close. So take Notre Dame plus the points. What's next?
If you were the Philadelphia Eagles, would you consider trading Carson Wentz away and making Nick Foles the starter?
I know I'm on an island with this one, and people are like, oh, I actually would. If you think about it, sometimes there's a perfect fit for a perfect team at a perfect time, and for whatever reason, Nick Foles is that guy. And it seems like Nick Foles has been around forever because he's already played for Kansas City and already had two different stints with Philadelphia. But the truth is, we're talking about a guy that's, what, probably not even 30 years old. While Carson Wentz looks like he's the next best thing, kind of like I would have said heading into the season with Andrew Luck, he's often injured, and I want to see him put together two, three, four of those years. Now, in the case of Andrew Luck, he's going to finish on the short list, probably top five in MVP voting with Drew Brees and Russell Wilson, and, of course, the guy that's going to end up winning it, Patrick Mahomes. But I haven't seen enough from Carson Wentz, and the proof is in the pudding with Nick Foles. Not to mention, yes, Foles is not as good of a quarterback as Carson Wentz and doesn't have that much of an upside, but think about the King's ransom that you could get back for a former number one overall pick that's already performed in the NFL like Carson Wentz. I mean, honestly, if you put him on the trade block, you could probably request three first-round future draft picks, and they would be high ones because it would probably be a crappy team.
What, for Carson Wentz?
Yeah.
No.
What do you think you'd get for him?
Maybe probably a couple twos.
Oh, I think you're getting multiple.
You're not getting multiple ones for Carson Wentz.
I think.
No, you're not. He's got one. He's had one good year, and then he tore his ACL. You're not getting multiple ones for that guy.
I think that the injury is definitely going to keep people.
Away. He's had multiple season-ending last two seasons, season-ending injuries.
Nobody
stupid enough in the NFL to trade multiple ones for that guy.
Yeah, see, I totally disagree because teams realize that if you have a quarterback, you have a chance, and if you don't have a quarterback, you have no chance.
But if you don't have a quarterback at the end of the season, you don't have a chance anyway.
Well, you can't predict.
You might as well just get a guy in the draft that you don't know is injury prone.
It's much more difficult to quote unquote get a guy in the draft. You could get a guy that turns into Sam Darnold. You get a guy that turns into Josh Rosen. Yes, you get a guy that turns into Patrick Mahomes. You could also get a guy that turns into Carson Wentz, or you could just go out there and actually get Carson Wentz if he's on the trade block.
Well, Carson Wentz isn't showing enough to be warranting multiple first rounds.
Yeah.
I don't think a team would trade a first round for Carson Wentz.
Not only would a team trade a first round pick, multiple teams would trade multiple.
I don't think any team in the NFL.
What's next? Last one.
That's it. Oh, no, you're right. UFC 232 on Saturday. Johnny Bones Jones, Alexander Gustafsson. For the light heavyweight title. This pay-per-view originally was in Las Vegas, got moved to Los Angeles earlier in the week. Why?
The first time that Gustafsson and John Jones fought was literally probably the best heavyweight fight in the history of the UFC and one of the best
light heavyweight
and one of the best fights, period. Frankly, I think that Gustafsson actually won the fight if you go back and watch it. It was definitely a really close one, and Bones has just been so dominant. He can beat you in so many different ways that he's so important to the sport right now, especially with Conor McGregor losing half of his last four fights. Probably should have lost both fights to Nate. With Ronda Rousey no longer even being in the sport. What this sport was 5 years ago, where they had Rousey and they had Conor, and then they also had John Jones, which is why the sport has become so popular the last 4 or 5 years, and all of a sudden, not that Conor's irrelevant, but he's not what he was even at the beginning of this year. And again, Ronda Rousey's now fighting in a different ring.
Conor's the biggest draw that they have.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt that he's still the biggest draw, but there's also no doubt that he's not as big of a draw as he was before he lost to Nate.
That's not true. They had the best-selling pay-per-view they've ever had when he lost to Khabib.
Yeah, there's no question about it, but...
And if his next fight is still going to draw over 1 million pay-per-view.
Right, buyers. But if you're arguing that Conor's star is... It's definitely not as bright as it was a year ago. I don't see how I could argue to the contrary.
He's lost. It is. It doesn't matter.
He lost to Khabib. He should have lost to Nate.
He ripped
people off. He lost to Floyd. And he went a year and a half.
He lost to Floyd in a sham of a fight, and he still made $100 million off that fight.
I'm not talking about the money.
How is his star diminished?
Because people don't want to see a loser fight like they want to see a winner.
The reason they just got 2.3 million buys after two losses.
The reason that people want... Yeah, you know what? They would have gotten 4 million if they would have come after
no,
wins.
They wouldn't, yes, no, they wouldn't because UFC's never had 4 million buys.
They would have had more buys.
No, they wouldn't have.
Okay, you're right. Coming off of a loss, they wouldn't have had more buys than coming off of a win. You're right. People like to see a guy coming off of a loss and they do more than a win. You're right. That's how sports works.
No, that was the greatest. That was the best... By a mile, too. It was like over 1 million buys better than their best-selling one. They would have not had more buys. His star is not diminished because he lost. Because people don't care. He's entertaining anyways.
again, these things are not mutually exclusive. Yes, he's entertaining. Yes, the UFC makes a lot of money off him. Yes, he's the most entertaining fighter. But to say that his star hasn't diminished?
It hasn't. People are still going to pay to whatever fight he does next is still going to do better than anyone else in that company.
You're still fighting. I still agree with that, but I still think that coming off of these losses, dude, if Conor McGregor would have beat Khabib, then all of a sudden, you're saying that they've never had, what, 2 million or 4 million? It sounds like you know what you're talking about.
I do know what I'm talking about.
They might have had 10 million.
They couldn't have had 10 million because they've never done 10 million.
This is hyperbole, bro. You have to understand this. Like, if I say that I'm really hungry and I'm going to eat a horse, I'm not actually going to eat a horse.
Then just say you're going to eat a burger or whatever and don't exaggerate and say you're going to eat a horse.
All right.
Can't argue facts with hyperbole.
I guess you do know everything. Chris Unocero, Sports Machine, Sean Levine, taking up until 6 o'clock right here on 610 Sports Radio.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Merry Christmas, Sports Machine on the mic, taking you up until 6 o'clock right here on 610 Sports Radio, all over the world being heard on the radio.com app. When I sign off tonight, Pete Sweeney, Sean Barber take over for Bink at Night. Those guys have you from 6 to 9 right here on 610. They're talking Kansas City Chiefs, and I assume they're probably going to bring up the name Patrick Mahomes. And I think that Patrick Mahomes is probably the best gift that, as a fan base, we've ever received, because it's not like, as good as it's been with Patrick Mahomes, as fun as it's been, as entertaining as it's been, no matter how this thing plays out, I think we could say that this has been a season that nobody's ever going to forget. For a lot of us, even if this team loses to Oakland, well, let me rephrase it. If this team loses to Oakland and then loses their first playoff game, if 2 weeks from now we're talking about the Chiefs past tense, we're talking about the season being over, then nobody's going to remember the season fondly. Then everybody and their mother and brother are going to remember this season as the biggest tease, as the biggest bust, as the biggest disappointment, maybe not just as Chiefs fans, but as local sports fans. Because if you think about what this team had on a platter, now, heading into this season, nobody really had too high of expectations. This was supposed to be a year of development for Patrick Mahomes. This was supposed to be a year Las Vegas told us the Chiefs were an average football team. They were going to win eight and a half, maybe nine games. That the Chargers were going to win the West. And the truth is, after the first game of the season, head-to-head against the Chargers, Patrick Mahomes was great. 4 touchdowns, no picks. We all, as a fan base, went, all right, maybe Vegas is wrong, and maybe we should recalibrate. Maybe we should readjust. Maybe we should have higher expectations for this team. Why not? Coming off of back-to-back division championships and having all this offensive talent. Heading into this year, I think there's an argument to be made that the Chiefs had the best contract at every single skill position on offense. Now, we didn't know that Patrick Mahomes was going to be the future MVP of the league, which I think he's going to end up being. But you know how much Patrick Mahomes makes? You know how much he takes from the Chiefs? Right now? It's going to be different next year and the year after that and after that. But right now, $6 million, if you want to include his signing bonus and his actual salary. So the Chiefs aren't paying him anything. If you can pay the best quarterback in the league $6 million a year, that gives you a lot of cap flexibility to put a lot of talent around him. Travis Kelce, again, he makes $6 million, which is a ton of money and one of the higher paid tight ends. But if you want to talk about money for production, Travis Kelce is basically one of the top, let's call it, 10 pass catchers in the league. If he was a wide receiver, he'd be one of the top 10 based on his production receivers in the league. I've got the numbers right here in front of me. 1,200 plus yards to go along with 11 touchdowns. Those are Odell Beckham type numbers, and Odell Beckham makes $20 million a year. So if you're paying your quarterback $6 million, who's going to win the league MVP, you're paying your tight end $6 million, who's the best at his position, you could argue that Tyreek Hill is on the short list with the best wide receivers in the league. Guess how much he's making this year? Wait for it. $680,000. $680,000. Then, of course, Kareem Hunt, no longer on the team, so it's a moot point, but heading into the season, still on his rookie contract. So my point is this, that this team we thought was maybe going to win 8 or 9 games, it all came down to one thing, because we knew the defense was going to suck. We knew the head coach was good enough. We knew the offense had a lot of really good players. The question was, how long is it going to take for Patrick Mahomes to catch up with the rest of them? And the answer was no time at all. And I'd be willing to say at this point, and I guess the timing is perfect because it's Christmas, that Patrick Mahomes is the best gift as a Chiefs fan base or as a Kansas City sports fan base that we've ever received. Because it's one of those gifts that just keeps on giving. Think about Eli Manning. Think about Philip Rivers. Think about Ben Roethlisberger. Hell, think about Tom Brady. What do all four of those guys have in common? They've all been playing for 15 years. They've all been playing in one uniform. And save Eli Manning, if you're talking about Ben, or if you're talking about Tom Brady, or if you're talking about Philip Rivers, they're still at or near the top of their game. Ben Roethlisberger is the one guy that has a chance to throw for more yards this year than even Patrick Mahomes. And he's been in the league now for 15 years. What a great gift it was when the Chiefs decided to trade up in the draft and to go out and get their quarterback. And instead of taking Deshaun Watson, and don't get it twisted, I'd probably be having the same conversation if they had gone after Deshaun Watson. But if you think about all the quarterbacks that have been drafted in the last couple of years in the first round, you got Lamar Jackson, you got Sam Darnold, you got Josh Rosen, you got Mitchell Trubisky, you got Baker Mayfield, you got Patrick Mahomes. There's such a big difference, not only in the upside, what Patrick Mahomes could be for the next 10, 12, 15 years. He could be Aaron Rodgers. He could be better than Aaron Rodgers. I would argue to you today that of all the quarterbacks that Andy Reid has coached, and we're talking about some of the all-time greats, Brett Favre, Donovan McNabb, Mike Vick, hell, throw Alex's Smith name in there also, that Patrick Mahomes is going to end up being the cream of the crop because of all of those guys. I see him as a mix of all of them. Brett Favre had the rocket right arm. So does Patrick Mahomes. Donovan McNabb and Alex Smith, both really heady, really good with their progression, didn't throw a ton of interceptions. Based on how many times he's thrown the ball around, there hasn't been that many poor decisions made from Patrick Mahomes. That, to me, has actually been the biggest surprise. I figured that he would struggle not only catching up with this offense just because, what does everybody always talk about their rookie year, how fast the NFL is, or their first full year, you get my drift. And it's not exactly like Patrick Mahomes was playing in the SEC where he was having to dissect these awesome defenses week in, week out. He was going up against teams like my beloved Kansas Jayhawks just 2 years ago. So that's what surprised me the most is what's between the ears. What's connected to the right arm doesn't surprise me at all. But as far as the decision-making, a lot like Alex Smith, a lot like Donovan McNabb, he's got a right arm like Brett Favre. And when it comes to getting outside the pocket, the only comparison that I could think of is another Andy Reid guy and Mike Vick. When the stat came up against the Broncos earlier this year, it may have been the most mind-boggling stat of all. That game, Patrick Mahomes had thrown for more yards outside the pocket than any quarterback in the last decade, including Mike Vick. So not only does he have a rocket right arm in the pocket, but Patrick Mahomes is the best in the league on the run. I know you know how special he's been, but check this out by the numbers. Yes, he's got 48 touchdowns and 11 interceptions for a quarterback rating of 114. I can't see any way this guy doesn't end up the league MVP. But let me put a little bit more context to it. 10 times this year, he's thrown for 3 touchdowns in a game. 4 times this year, he's thrown for 5 touchdowns in a game. And 2 times this year, he's thrown for 6 touchdowns in a game. So, Chiefs fans, I wonder this, and we'll talk about this on the other side. Has he been so good and so consistent that that's what you think he's going to do the rest of the way? Or as a lifelong Chiefs fan, do you think, ruh-roh, here comes the dud? Let's talk about it next on The Drive. Uno Cero on the Sports Machine till 6 o'clock right here on 610 Sports Radio.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
We'll get you the hits coming up in about 10 minutes, as we always do on The Drive at 5 o'clock. Chris Unocero, Sports Machine, Sean Levine, take you up until 6 o'clock right here on 610 Sports Radio. Here's the plan. The final hour, we'll get you the hits. Then we'll step back inside the mind of the machine. And then me, the machine, I turn into the answering machine. You can text me, and I'll answer whatever you want to know. But let's get back into the Kansas City Chiefs, specifically Patrick Mahomes, where, again, no matter how this season ends up playing out, I think we would all agree It's been incredibly entertaining. It's been really fun, and the future is bright. However, for those that say, you don't need to cash in right now because the window's just opening, I say, I can't say shut up because it's Christmas, so I'll just say zip it. Because you do need to cash in right now. Because in the history of the NFL, there have been so many teams that thought that their window was 3 years, 5 years. In the case of the Chiefs, I've heard people say upwards of the next decade. As long as you've got Patrick Mahomes, you have a chance. The truth is this, and people always want to go back to the same example, so I'll do the same thing. Dan Marino threw for more touchdowns his second season than even, well, I guess they're tied right now with Patrick Mahomes. He threw 48 touchdowns his second season, did Dan Marino. He took his team to the Super Bowl, and then that's it. And statistically, that was the best career year he ever had with 48 touchdowns. He only threw for 40 one other time in his career and never got back to a Super Bowl. So all I'm suggesting is that you got to strike while the iron's hot, because you have a few things going for you if you're the Chiefs. And all this is contingent upon beating the Oakland Raiders. And frankly, if you don't beat the Oakland Raiders at home where you're a two-touchdown favorite with everything on the line, then you're probably not a good enough football team, even with home field advantage, no matter what your road is, to win the Super Bowl. If the Chiefs lose to Oakland on Sunday, I mean, does anybody think the Chiefs are going to lose to Oakland on Sunday? The Chargers are going to win. The Chiefs are going to all of a sudden, what would that be, three out of the last four games? They'd have to go on the road. They'll be the five seed instead of the one seed. And then they're going to get hot, and then they're going to turn things around all of a sudden? They're going to go on the road and win? No. No. This entire season and everything as a fan base that we've been rooting for and rooting toward comes into play with one win versus the Oakland Raiders on Sunday. That's the glass half full. The glass half empty is once you get to the postseason, you're going to have to face teams like Seattle and the Chargers and the Rams and New England, which all happen to be the four teams that beat you. But when it comes down to this game versus Oakland, you cannot take them lightly, and here's why. First of all, you're just not good enough to. This is not the same football team that they were the first game of the season out the gates when they beat Phillip Rivers on the road, or in week two when they beat Ben Roethlisberger on the road, or even when they came home and beat Garoppolo and beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. At time, that team was feeling really good about themselves. Nothing had gone wrong. Really nobody. I mean, Eric Berry was still hurt, but you weren't dealing with as many injuries. Patrick Mahomes was yet to throw an interception. The team was undefeated. You already had a couple of division wins versus Denver and the Chargers. It was all sunshine and daffodils, but the truth is, since December, something has changed. And maybe that something is as simple as saying, yeah, thank you, Captain Obvious. You had Kareem Hunt, and now you don't. And if anybody doesn't think that Kareem Hunt was a huge difference maker, then you're watching something else. Again, he's not Patrick Mahomes. If you take Pat off the field, you don't have a chance. But we've seen when you take Kareem Hunt off the field, it's a completely different football team. If for nothing else, not just the running game where Kareem Hunt had seven touchdowns on the ground, but he also had another seven through the air. So clearly since December, something has changed. Is it as simple as pointing to the lack of Kareem Hunt? Maybe. Maybe that's it. And maybe it's just going to take a little while for Ware and Williams and Williams and Williams and Williams and West and all this stable of running backs to get back on the same page as Patrick Mahomes was with Kareem Hunt. Because the Raiders, as bad of a football team as they are, when you played them December 2nd, so not even a month ago, they weren't that bad. You barely beat them. You beat them by, what was it, 6 or 7 points. And frankly, since then, you've gotten much worse. Much worse. Should have lost to Baltimore, did lose to Seattle, did lose to the Chargers. And the Raiders since then have gotten much better. They're 3-3. Now, anybody that watched last night's game and thinks that all of a sudden the Raiders are a decent or even average football team, that's not what I saw. I saw a Broncos football team that's just done, that basically quit. Their coach is about to get fired. Their team's not going to the playoffs. They've got a bunch of free agents. That's what I saw. I didn't see that Oakland all of a sudden was a decent football team. I saw that Denver is actually much worse than I thought they were going to be. But the truth is the Chiefs are vulnerable. Their confidence isn't very high. And they know they have to win this game, which means additional pressure. And I wonder how much that's going to factor in. Because anytime, whatever your job is, if you've got more pressure, things are going to go one of two ways. It's going to help you or it's going to hurt you. And in the case of the Chiefs, they haven't faced a lot of pressure this season. It's been a pretty smooth sailing run. But there's a lot of pressure in this game versus the Raiders because you're playing at the same time as the Chargers. And if the Chargers win, and if you start to lose the Raiders and you're looking at the scoreboard and all of a sudden it's looking like you're going to go from being the number one overall seed with a bye and two home games to a number five seed with three straight road games. Talk about the story changing in the middle of the book. But fortunately, all the Chiefs need to do for us to get that warm and fuzzy feeling heading into the new year is just beat the damn Oakland Raiders at home. You're a two-touchdown favorite. 3 hours in the book. One more coming up. We'll get you the hits. We'll step back inside the mind of the machine. And then I become the answering machine. All in the 5 o'clock hour right here on The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.